and guys that can guard all five positions. And so you can see where, all right, these guys that maybe don't have the highest pro prospects, like Terrace Reed, like he's not really been creeping up on a ton of draft boards, but it's like, man, that guy's a hell of a college basketball player.
Tell you what, I watching last night's game, I know his numbers don't jump off the page because the way the Phoenix Suns play. I like Oso Igodoro. He's long. He's athletic. He's legit 6'11". He finishes around the rim. He is what he is. I would take a starting center that gave me 10 to 15, depending on how you're running the offense, and, you know, 8 to 11 every night and have a wing scorer, you know, I'd be just fine with that. You're not going to find Moses Malone out there, you know, giving you 28 and 10 with four extra offensive rebounds, so it looks like 14 because he missed a layup or two.
I mean, I know it's been a long season. I mean, just think about last year when the Grizzlies reinserted Edie into the lineup, and think about this year when Zach missed the start of the season and he got in there. It's like, oh, they can get rebounds. They can get stops.
And how he looked after the procedure, and unfortunately, you know, the stress reaction. I just think about the 6 minutes in Cleveland, and I go,
"That would have been fun."
I'm watching, I'm like, "Oh man, this looks good." Like the Cavs were even going, "Like, okay, we're in for it now." And 6 minutes later, they weren't in for it anymore, and we never saw it again. And that's the troubling thing. But yeah, it's one of those things where I think there's a place for bigs in the league again. You know, I'm not going to go the Bam out of bio route. And, we can debate that all they want. And I know Eric Spoelstra is going to apologize to absolutely no one. Great. I still think if that had happened to Miami, Eric Spoelstra would feel differently if somebody was running up a big number and then that opponent was fouling your team to get extra possessions to try to get a number. That seemed a little silly to me. I'm not mad that he got fouled as many times as he did. I'm not mad that he flexed his muscle. But you're up that big and you're leaving him in. You're leaving him in for one purpose. Cool. Let him go get his. I don't have a problem with that either. Don't extend the game when you don't need to extend the game when you're up that by that much. That to me was the only thing egregious there. But Bam Adebayo is basically, a big that can score down low, and you have some of those. Jokic can step outside, but you know who's a one of one. He's so different in what he does, and the three is such a weapon, there's no doubt about it. But I going back to it, I think there's a place for bigs that can put their back to the basket and score. And I think we're going to see, college guys do that. You still have to be athletic. That's the thing in the NBA.
Like, you got to be able to play defense at the end of the game.
You can't be one of those big, clodgy, I hate to say it, guys from the Big Ten that we see on like Wisconsin, Purdue, and yet like these just big, massive human beings that actually can catch a ball and move their feet a little bit. When you get to the NBA, you got to move your feet a lot. Like we use the Luka Garza example all the time. He was a monster at Iowa, and it's not that way in the NBA. Now he's found a place with Boston, but still it's not the same. He was the best player in college basketball, and he's just a guy in the NBA that's found a home with Boston, but they're using him the right way. Nemias Keita, nobody had ever heard of. He's not a guy that steps outside, but he's productive for Boston because Joe Mazzulla knows how to use him and complement his guys. So, and then you have other bigs, that nobody's necessarily heard of. Quentin Post, who started at Mississippi State, went to Boston College. He's found a home with the Golden State Warriors because he can knock down a corner three, but when you need him to get on the block, he'll get on the block and he'll help you protect the rim. So it's going to be interesting to see. So I think this college tournament's been fun. We've seen a lot of great players. We've seen a lot of great styles. I agree with you and Tim looking at this. I'm bummed, kind of, I hate to say it, that I wish the Michigan-Arizona game would have been potentially the final.
On Monday, yeah.
I think, but it was all set up where you thought, all right, well, we could have, all four one seeds. And if you'd have had all four one seeds, it would have been arguably one of the best Final Fours of all time. But Illinois earned it. And, UConn earned it because Duke, for whatever reason, didn't just go finish it out. And I heard all the analysis. They kind of looked like they were playing the possession game. Great. Can't blame John Shire for that. But, at the end of the day, UConn didn't let go of the rope, and they stayed in it. And so I can deal with that. But I think the two best teams are playing in the semifinals, on Saturday.
Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
All right, guys.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We come back. Let's get into the list. We have Hall of Fame basketball. We have basketball Hall of Fame inductees, or I guess the future inductees. We'll talk about that. There's a couple of surprising names. We'll get into all of that and more from the world of sports when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Maybe you've been thinking about selling your home the easiest way by taking a cash offer and selling your home as is without any hassles. Call my buddy Josh Hysall before you take one of those because he can get you a cash offer too, except it's going to be for 100% of your home's market value, or he can even beat that. John wanted to sell his home in Arlington without the stress or having to wait, and he decided to reach out to Josh about a cash offer. Josh just didn't give him one. He got him three, but he also had a message for John. For John. John could sell his house for even more money by listing it the traditional way, and it didn't take long at all either. Josh's marketing strategy reaches thousands of potential home buyers every single day. That helps them find buyers fast, and they sell homes for the most money possible. It only took Josh 12 days to find John a buyer to beat the cash offers, even with Josh's being for the full market value. The process was so easy for John, he made the right choice by calling Josh Hysall. Give Josh a call today, 901-461-8147, or you can visit the website joshhasthebuyers.com. joshhasthebuyers.com. Also, you can go ahead and Google Josh Hysall and see over 350 five-star Google reviews. Go see Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty if you're thinking about selling your home today. Let's get into the list. Grizzlies lease. Yeah, Tim, I know you love some hot Grizzlies lease talk.
Oh, yeah.
This from my buddy Sam Hardiman over at the Daily Memphian. A Shelby County Board of Commissioners vote on Monday signaled the subtle progress local governments are making toward a long-term lease with the Memphis Grizzlies. The vote, a resolution asking the Tennessee General Assembly to change how Shelby County can allocate its hotel-motel taxes in the future, represented another necessary step towards funding some of the $550 million renovations at FedEx Forum. The resolution asked the state legislature to allow Shelby County to continue collecting hotel-motel taxes until 2050 or until a National Basketball Association franchise is no longer the tenant in an indoor sports facility owned by the county and the city, which would, of course, be FedEx Forum. The reason the county wants to tweak the law governing hotel-motel tax collections, the resolution said, is because it wants to honor its commitment to fund current and future obligations under that arena use and operation agreement, including any amendments, supplements, and successor agreement, the resolution said. So putting into layman's terms, they want to essentially extend the hotel-motel tax, the raise that we've had, to continue funding the renovations. I was thinking about it in these terms, and I don't really know if I have a great answer, but do you think we need to, like, especially in American professional sports, and I'll use the NBA because it's the younger, you know, of the big three traditional professional sports leagues. Do you think we'd be better off, like, establishing roots rather than, hey, let's just figure out if we can find another city to keep moving? Like, I feel like for the like health of a league, like, you need to at least have some built-in, like legacy fan bases.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair, especially considering they're going to add two more, right? And these two additions are not going to be, I mean, Seattle's already got a built-in fan base, but Vegas, I mean, we could talk more about that.
Well, I was going to use Vegas as an example, and I understand that this may not be perfect apples to oranges, but, like, I look at a place like Vegas where there is money and there's a sports appetite.
Very transient, though.
It is transient, but also, like, I look at it in terms of the expansion franchise with the Knights has been a tremendous success. Is it as simple as it was an expansion team and it was theirs rather than taking it from somewhere else? No, like, they won early, there was success, and there's a lot of things that went into it. But, like, I would be curious in a decade to see when we look at whatever the Vegas NBA team is, the Vegas Knights, mm-hmm. the Raiders, and the A's, will we be able to distinguish between the fan bases? Because so far what we've seen with the Raiders is a lot of people, at least local people, it seems, buy season tickets and kind of sell them as an income stream. 100%. And more times than not, when you see a Raiders game, there's, you know, the Raiders are going with a silent count at home. I suspect we'd see something probably similar with the A's because it doesn't seem like the Vegas appetite is there. But I'd be curious to know, like, what is the enthusiasm for the NBA team?
I don't know. You know, going back to the Golden Knights for a moment, you hit it well because they come in. This was a city starved for anything, right? They had been said, whoa, you guys can't get anything. You're the dirty gambling place, right? And then they got a hockey team, and I think I could speak for most people, and they came before I moved to Vegas, but I could speak for most people, they didn't really have a hockey team. So it's like, oh my God, we have a pro sports franchise. They're good, right? Run to the Stanley Cup final year one, and we didn't really have a team prior to that. So to me, it was like a perfect storm. The Raiders come to town, and most people in this city already have a team, whether it be the Niners or whoever. The A's, I don't know. I don't envision this being a big baseball town. Now, if they win, which is kind of funny to think about right now, considering the state of the A's, only winless team in baseball. If they win, we'll see. I mean, the Aviators, a Triple A team, which is completely different. I totally understand that. They're one of the most well-attended Triple A teams in all of baseball. Basketball, I'm fascinated by because it's a Lakers town.
Yeah.
Right? It's a big Lakers town.
Even though you can't watch the games locally, but yes.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. I mean, outside of that, you know, go to your sports book and watch the Lakers. I don't know if people are going to just jump ship from being a lifelong Laker fan to becoming a Vegas whatever fan. So I don't know. I am very curious. And it might be similar to what we see with the Raiders, where you might see a lot of these people scoop up season tickets and then hit it big when the Lakers come to town or when a superstar comes to town, Wembanyama, et cetera. I don't know. I'm very curious. But I always thought that NBA made the most sense in the city. What's going to be fascinating, Jeffrey, is they don't want the basketball team sharing the same arena as the Golden Knights. So for those who have not been to Vegas, T-Mobile Arena, where the Knights play, is a perfect location. It's smack dab in the middle of Park MGM, Mandalay Bay, everything right around, all the MGM.
Just going to leave New York, New York out of this?
New York, New York, excuse me, apologies. If you so want to, the Excalibur. It's really well located. The thought is maybe the basketball arena is more southern down the strip, which avoids foot traffic, which I don't know, but I mean, that's putting the cart before the horse. But
there's also more space that way.
There's a ton of space that way. Tons of space if you go further down, you know, towards the South Point, which is, you know, as you would imagine, south of the strip, or even further down to where I live in Henderson. But I will say, going back to your initial points, like, what other cities are there that are clamoring? If we're adding a team to Vegas and Seattle, it's like, all right, what other cities are even a realistic possibility? I know Nashville's been brought up, but you've kind of already crushed that. Like, I don't know. Like, what else makes sense?
So I think there's a couple of questions. Number one, I'm curious to know, in these other markets, like, for instance, let's take Kansas City, for example. Mm-hmm. Kansas City has the NFL. They have Major League Baseball, and they have MLS. Mm-hmm. Kansas is obviously a market that would very much like basketball. But do they have people that...
Do they want pro basketball?
Correct. Like, and now that we see the cost of all these franchises and whatnot, like, A, I don't know if we need to keep expanding, but then you run into these situations where, okay, when you're trying to move teams... Like, unless one comes for sale, like, you run into a lot of complications. And this is where, like, I think the league would be better off, like, keeping these markets. Like, when you just feel like you've got a franchise that's just hopped around, like, it's part of why the Clippers struggled forever. And now the Clippers actually have a fan base. It's not as significant nearly as the Lakers. I think you could even make the argument it might not be as strong as the Kings. but they have a bigger fan base now than they ever had. But like they were jumping around from San Diego to Anaheim to, you know, God knows where they were going to play. Like, I just think when you actually establish some roots, like it could probably help with the overall general interest in your league rather than just feeling like, all right, man, it's just kind of like a traveling circus.
And I'm not just saying this because of, you know, where we're hosting this radio show or where you are. I can think of a couple other franchises that I would rather kick out of their current digs than Memphis, New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, you run in, though, it's like the same issue. Like, all right, as long as the Bensons own the Pelicans, that thing's staying in New Orleans. And while Robert Pera has never actively sought since, I guess, maybe since he first bought the team, but he has had the opportunities. This is a fair statement. Post-COVID, the city did not meet lease demands. This is exactly how Kroenke was able to move the Rams to L.A. He could have moved the team basically penalty-free and did not. Now, how much of that is the league? How much of that is, you know, other owners saying, like, hey, we're not going to support this guy moving to one of the glamour markets, and plus we want to save those for expansion? Like, I acknowledge that there are complicating factors, but the point is that he had the opportunity to move the team, and he did not.
Right.
But then, like, you know, like, what do you do with, you know, at the same time, like, take a look at Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, the Thunder are a significant part of the lifeblood. They, instead of renovating their arena, they're like, all right, here's $1 billion. Here's a brand new arena.
Right. Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. I mean, this is the other thing where I'll acknowledge I am being a hypocrite, but I'm a one-issue voter. I do not really think the NBA is going to be better off with expanding two more teams. But it's better for Memphis, so I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, all you care about is...
I'm a one-issue voter, baby.
Of course.
But, like, do you really in your heart of hearts think the league is better needing more talent dispersed?
No, I don't. I mean, look at the league this year. I mean, it's a very odd year where you've got a clear differentiator of playoff teams and tanking teams. It's pretty wild.
Well, and then even in like the tanking teams and the playoff teams, there's like even like a subsect. Like, for instance, I'm getting furious with the Grizzlies because they're not tanking at the level like the Wizards, the Nets, mm-hmm. the Jazz are. Like, they're beating Denver on the second night of a back-to-back. They beat Chicago, and now they're sitting here and looking at potentially being the eighth best odds instead of the sixth best odds. And, like, I understand that this draft is going to be critical if you want to expedite a rebuild, and yet here they are winning a couple of games because they're not as committed to sucking as some of the other teams are.
Well, it was like the Bucks. It was like, oh no, we're gonna let Giannis play. I'm like, why would you let Giannis play? Like, because he'd be a little hurt, like upset. I mean, you're just wasting a chance to get a better player in this draft. So, yeah, I don't know.
I do understand trying to make it work though. Again,
oh man, I just did Tankathon right now. Ooh.
Oh, it's gross.
New Orleans getting the one and then having to give it to Atlanta. Ooh, that would be rough.
I just did it, and the Grizzlies got one.
There you go.
And then I also need Orlando. I need Orlando to get beat in that play-in.
Ooh, Washington getting the one. Okay, baby. Is DeBansa now the guy?
I can't tell if it's momentum or if... I do think... When people saw, because I think the argument for Peterson initially was he is a better offensive player. And then I think when people saw DeBansa throughout the course of the season, it's like, okay, maybe even if you think Peterson's offensive game is better, DeBansa's is still close, and you can sit there and, like, you can put DeBansa on pretty much every NBA team and know what his role is.
Yeah, we talked about, I think, last week, it was the, I think the sheer intrigue of Peterson and the upside that is there, I think has GMs maybe like, ugh, what if I pass on this dude? My new question is, has Acuff passed Boozer?
I also think Caleb Wilson's going to have something to say about this, because I do think Caleb Wilson's going to get to the combine and everybody's going to be like, holy hell.
Right.
I think the thing that'll be interesting about Acuff is I don't know if Acuff passes. I don't know if Acuff passes DeBansa, Peterson, or Boozer. But one thing I do think is happening to Boozer is it feels like Boozer's getting some negative momentum, mm-hmm. where I know his ceiling is probably not as high as the rest of these guys. I do think it's also fair to ask this question. When we draft on potential, how many of these guys actually hit the ceiling? I think if I'm sitting there, I think it also depends on what team it is. I don't hate drafting a high floor guy. You give me a guy that I know is going to be a really good player for a decade, that's not going to be invaluable.
I feel like too many people equate high floor to low ceiling.
Yeah, and that's
like those two things aren't, you know, they're not mutually like exclusive. Like you can have a high floor and be really, really good for a long time and still be able to grow your game.
Well, like, okay, let's think. Let's go back to like, hit me with like the 2017 draft. All right, let's see. All right.
That's the Markelle Fultz draft.
All right, so this is the Fultz draft. Fultz is always interesting because, like, to me, like, Fultz was yet again a ceiling guy, but then you also don't know, like, how much of his career was really shaped by injury.
Right.
He wasn't really on a great trajectory, but, okay. Then we go with Lonzo. Lonzo's also another guy, injury concerns, but I also think that the trajectory was probably not going to be better than, shall we say, Tatum. But wasn't kind of the knock on Tatum coming into the draft was didn't have the ceiling that the other guys did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh Jackson is a...
There were a couple big misses, like just whiffs in this draft, I feel like, too. Like, look at 8.
Yeah. Like Josh Jackson, like how much is Josh Jackson? Like he to me is like another high ceiling guy. Like I would rather have taken Fox at 4, and like I said that in real time. Like that's like you could see, even if Fox didn't have like, even if Fox wasn't going to be Steph Curry, you still knew, like you could see how De'Aaron Fox was going to be a good NBA player. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, then we have, let's see.
I mean, you got one of the all-time on upside 2009. Haseem Thabeet.
That's still a sore subject.
Too soon?
That's still too soon.
Always too soon.
Does he have his numbers up in the rafters at UConn?
I mean, he was Big East Defensive Player of the Year.
Hey.
Got to put up a banner for that, right?
I mean, I think he led the Big East in blocked shots. That's a tough one because that's the one where ownership meddled. That was Michael Heisley, who was a UConn guy, and I think he was the guy that just watched UConn basketball and saw the beat. And then he was trying to sell the team. This is where you start to get into like the struggles of the, well, they always believed in Marc Gasol. It's like, well, then why did you draft Haseem Thabeet? when you had Marc Gasol on the roster. So like there's some competing interest, but I think that would be, to me, like that's kind of tough when you sit there and go, well, we always believed in him, and then we took a center. Yeah, no, that one hurts. That one hurts because even if like you take James Harden.
Yeah, I'm not even saying Steph Curry, right? Like, yeah,
well, I mean, literally, it's like we took the beat. Should have took literally anybody. Tyreek didn't matter. Like all of them.
That was my favorite draft because I think the Wizards traded the 5th pick for Randy Foy and Mike Miller, and they could have drafted Steph Curry. And they got Mike Miller and Randy Foy for the 5th overall pick.
Steph was the precursor to Mahomes, where for like 10 years we were reading stories of GMs that wanted to draft Steph Curry but didn't.
Oh, we were going to get that draft. We had a pick. We were going to trade up to 9 to get him. Yeah, I'm sure you were.
Does anyone remember what was SGA's draft profile?
With the Clippers?
He was what, the 11th pick?
He was the 11th pick. But if I recall, didn't he wind up at Kentucky like coming off the bench, even though he played like 30 minutes a game? Like he was playing starter minutes, but like Cal convinced him to be like sixth man.
Yeah, he started 24 of 37 games, averaged 14-5-4 in his 1 year at Kentucky. And that Kentucky team lost in the Sweet 16.
Because like that's an interesting draft where Ayton goes 1. Bagley goes 2. Doncic at 3. Jaren at 4. Trey at 5.
And they traded Doncic.
And Doncic and Trey get traded.
Yeah.
Then Mo Bamba goes 6. Wendell Carter goes 7. Colin Sexton, 8. Kevin Knox, 9. Mikal Bridges, 10. SGA, 11. Miles Bridges, 12. Then the next like noteworthy player, best player, is Jalen Brunson in the second round at 33.
Oh, man, just going to jump over my two ginger brothers. Dante DiVincenzo, 17. Kevin Herter, 19.
Well, I was laughing. I don't know if I've ever done the math. The Grizzlies literally took Javon Carter right before Jalen Brunson got picked. We don't ever bring that one up.
No.
Well, why would you?
Well, but I mean, like, we always will bring up the Thabit draft, but, like, what if the Grizzlies draft Brunson at 32? And
you've got, like, a true, like, scoring guard with Jaren.
He's leaving to go to the Knicks anyways.
Well, what if the Mavs would have given him the deal?
True.
Because, like, I do think there's a little bit of... I think, like, where you get drafted can kind of sometimes work against you because it's, like, he was extension eligible after he had that heater with the Mavs, but I think they thought this is nothing more than a heater. And then he bets on himself, has another great year, then he has the Knicks deal. But like, what if the Grizzlies would have given him the extension? Like, I think if the Mavs give him an extension, he's there in Dallas.
I mean, how can you doubt anything that franchise has done? I mean, they are just...
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Before we take a break. Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. All right, we have the newest list of inductees, or I should say partial list. So according to Sham Sharania, Amari Stoudemire, Candace Parker, Elena Deldon, and Doc Rivers are among the members inducted to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2026. Maybe this is because we have a wider pool of women to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Candace Parker and Elena Deldon, I'm like, are you guys serious? Like, Amari Stoudemire, good player.
Hall of very good.
Now, I also acknowledge the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame is a lot easier to get into.
I mean, I've got a chance, I think.
I think if you, like...
I believe in you, Tim.
Like, contributions... But, like, Candace Parker and Elena Deldon are on a different level than Amari Stoudemire. And then I never know what to do with Doc. The late stage Doc's not helping the old resume.
No, it is not. It's kind of hard to right now have Doc being in there. But yeah, to your point about the two ladies getting
like transitional,
in,
like transformative basketball players.
Elite champion MVP level players. And Amari Stoudemire was like, yeah, remember when he was on the Suns? That was cool.
Well, and then it's like with Doc, it's like you start doing the old math. It's like, how many titles would maybe like Spoelstra have won with Boston? Like, I don't know.
And I'm like, Doc, should you have gone back to Milwaukee? Just kind of go. I mean, I guess you're getting your money, so.
Did anybody pick up Adrian Griffin?
No.
That's a little surprising, right?
He's not on any staff?
Not that I
mean,
know
I'm
of.
Sure he's an assistant somewhere, right? He's got to be. Or is he literally, if he's just cashing his money, that guy's a hero.
According to
most recently served as head coach of the Bucks. Yeah.
Good for him.
He's getting those checks.
I think, wasn't his son in the tournament? I want to say, oh no, I'll tell you what it was.
His son was a first round draft pick.
No, I'll tell you exactly what happened when I thought about, his son played at Duke, right? Yeah. When Hubert got fired last week, I paid my respects to that man. And I went back and I watched Coach K night.
Mm.
And I watched the Final Four game. And A.J. Griffin that is on that team. And that's why I was thinking, I was like, oh, wasn't he in the tournament? I was like, oh, yeah, that's Adrian Griffin's son. By the way, those wins hold up. Also,
Coach K scolding the crowd after Coach K.
Oh, I watched three different versions of the sniping at the fans. The orchestrated, oh, there was an underrated great moment where he was trying to do the family photo op, but only like his daughters got the front row seats. And then you just see like these, I don't know if they're cousins, I don't know, like, he's like signaling for him, and there's people having to run all the way from like one end of the arena to the other so that they can come take like a family group hug. Like he like just scolded them to run. Like, you're supposed to be over here. Get over here. Like, I do think, as we were discussing the Duke thing, like how much of it's like residual Coach K hate? God, can you imagine the lashing Shire just got when he got back to Durham yesterday?
From Coach?
Oh, yeah. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
He was going to fade away. He wasn't going to be involved at all.
Outside. Now I might have to come back and coach. I'd support it. God, forget. I do think, I was thinking about this also with Duke. Is Shire going to be in the Coach Cal zone? And here's what I mean. When all of the other teams were coming up that were doing it with collections of older players, Cal was starting to take, you know, like, you can't do it with all freshmen anymore.
Yep.
This is back-to-back years where they've unquestionably had the best collection of young talent. How much of Caden Boozer making the mistake is just Caden Boozer in game number, whatever, 38? And then furthermore, what, Duke played probably five close games this year?
Yeah, the ACC didn't do him any favors. They kind of blew everyone out. You know, they blew the lead to Texas Tech in December. They blew the lead to UNC. They beat Michigan. I would say this, defending Shire a little bit. I thought last year's team and that debacle was more egregious than Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, the thing is, I think I agree with you.
I don't even think this Duke team, I mean, I'm not going to say they're not that good. That's not fair. They're very good.
They did not look like they were on the same level as the last month. I'll say this. I think when they were at full strength, they had a case that Arizona and Michigan should be in the same level.
Like sure, they beat Michigan, right?
Correct.
They beat Michigan. But when Caleb Foster got hurt, they didn't have that typical Duke guy. They're like, oh, God, don't let him shoot. You know, Caleb Foster, good, you know, okay. Isaiah Evans had some moments where he could hit threes, but it was hard to kind of define this Duke team. Boozer's going to be National Player of the Year. He was awesome. But they didn't really have, like, when we talked Michigan and Arizona to open the show, we're like, enormous, huge, those guys are beasts. It's like, how do you define this Duke team? Like, last year it was like, they had Cooper Flagg and Con Knipple. That's outrageous. Now it's like, yeah, Cameron Boozer was awesome, but who else was a guy that, like, you feared?
Well, the reason why I was bringing up the Coach K night, the other thing that you realized is, and maybe this doesn't happen as much anymore because scouting's changed. Man, there's a lot of Duke talent that was really overrated. Because when you watch that, as much as I enjoyed watching Coach K die again and again and again.
Coach K is still alive.
No, he's dead. They lost in the Final Four on his last game. He lost his first loss and his last loss of his career to North Carolina. That team was Paolo Banchero and a bunch of, like, overrated guys.
Ooh, we got another Naismith Hall of Famer.
Uh-oh.
Mark Few. Ooh, touchy subject.
How many college guys are in there without a title?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Now, does he get some residual, like, USA?
I'm cool with Mark Few being in there. I think he's a really good coach.
And he's a really good coach. I think he also has a really good job.
I think he has an amazing job.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the NFL additions. Also coming up later, we got to discuss Mark Cuban with seller's remorse. We'll talk about that as well. Coming up later on during the show. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Robert Irwin Jewelers is the number one place to buy engagement rings. Why might you ask? Well, you get more choices. Robert Irwin Jewelers has a large collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They also make custom designing your engagement ring risk-free and easy. You can do so with peace of mind with a meant-to-be guarantee. That means that you buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and you'll have a full 365 days to return it, no questions asked. Every designer diamond engagement ring mounting at Robert Irwin Jewelers is fully customizable to accommodate the center diamond size and shape of your choice. Plus, you can choose from yellow, white, or rose gold. If you can dream it, Robert Irwin Jewelers can make it. Robert Irwin Jewelers can make an engagement ring from something as simple as a picture or a drawing or even a dream that you have in your head. They also have free ring sizing for life, as well as free jewelry spa service for life. You can also ask her now and pay later with financing options like 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Robert Irwin Jewelers has over four decades of experience in the jewelry business and has become a trusted name known for providing timeless treasures for generations of family. So go check out the Diamond Showroom over on Perkins, extended across from Laurelwood, the Bartlett location on Stage Road, right next to the Kroger, and they'll be opening their brand new South Haven location soon. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can also shop online at rijewelers.com. All right, boys. We got the owners down in Arizona, and we have had the approval of four rule changes. You ready?
Hit me.
This is by the competition committee. All four by the competition committee. To permit the kicking team to declare an onside kick at any time during the game. Okay, so what we had, it was the fourth quarter, I think, when you could declare.
I want to say it was it the back end of both quarter or second and fourth?
I want to say it was just the fourth quarter because the only time I can remember the Lions and the Bills last year, the Lions fell behind and they started doing onside kicks in the fourth quarter. I still think it, like, the whole point of you've gotten rid of the surprise onside kick.
Yep.
So I guess if you fall behind earlier in the third quarter and you want to start to do it, maybe. But, like, I don't think this actually changes anything. I was much more open to the idea of the fourth and whatever, 18, if you wanted to go for it.
I always thought that was interesting. Like, that'd be fun.
I mean, I know in the Packers-Bears game, they did recover one. But I always feel like you're never going to get it.
And it also, to your point, if using the Packers-Bears game, it feels like when you recover one, it's because the receiving team screwed up. Was it Dobbs? Like went off his chest,
yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Like, he was in perfect position. Like, they had it. They were in position to make the play.
Hands team just didn't do their job.
Correct. He didn't execute the catch. I think for a while the kickers started doing like the flat spinner that had maybe a little bit of success.
Oh, the one kind of stays on the ground.
I've been thinking about this. So we've had ABS in Major League Baseball, and I would say it's being met with pretty much uniform approval.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I give baseball some
Not
credit.
Not for J.B. Buckner.
Wow.
Well, that's tough.
That sounds more like a CB problem.
But in terms of fans, I think everybody's been, in general, like viewing it favorably. It had been tested for years and years, and they got the system to where they felt comfortable debuting it. So I give them credit for execution. It also just makes you realize, like, the kickoff in the NFL, God, that thing sucks.
Oh, the new thing?
Yeah.
I guess, how long have we had that now? Is that 2 years?
Last year was year two.
So this will, okay, so we've had 2 full years.
Yeah.
It is always jarring also to go from Saturday to Sunday.
I know.
Right.
And just like, and it's like, I get it. Now, I would also argue this. Part of the problem with it was when they adopted it from the UFL, they didn't take all the incentives. Like, they modified it, and so that will now be adjusted. So we now have the competition committee will be eliminating the kicking team's incentive to intentionally kick off kick the ball out of bounds when kicking off from the 50. Are we? I mean, I assume we're moving the ball up, but where to? They will They will also be modifying the kickoff alignment requirements for the receiving team players in the setup zone. And then finally, which we knew this one was happening, the competition committee approved for 1 year only to allow the NFL officiating department to correct clear and obvious misses made by on-field officials that impact the game in the event that there is a work stoppage involving the game officials represented by the NFL Referees Association. Also, they have begun the process of hiring college officials.
VAR to the NFL.
I don't know if I'd call this VAR, because VAR is at least, like, right, they tell you got to go review it, right? And then you look at it. This is eye in the sky. This is what they do during the playoffs, but they don't tell anyone. It is. Now, I understand some of that might be negotiated by the Refs Association for not wanting it. Like, I acknowledge that it's a negotiation.
Right.
Why, if we're going to have replay, why not do it like that? Like, Tim, I was saying this with Hasseltine. Why do we not have a command center during the NCAA tournament? Instead of having to stop and check the clock, have so someone brutal. That's watching it and going, put 4.7 on the clock.
I do feel like it's been a little faster this year than in previous years, but it's still painful. Like, figure it out. All of these. Like, there's so much money in all of these sports from television deals. Like, figure this thing out, man.
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about with ABS, baseball right now is kind of on a hot streak in terms of changes made, good approval rating. The pitch clock, I feel like most people enjoy. I do argue, though, it is unquestionably better for TV. When you are at a game, the game goes at like a breakneck pace. You blink and it's the fifth inning. I understand why they did it. Almost every other league, I feel like when they try to change a rule, it's not working right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, yeah. I was trying to think, like, what are some of the best rule changes?
You said outside of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the three-point line, you'd have to say, is a success.
I was about to say, how far back are we going?
Where are we on overtime?
Let's think back in, like, the last 20 years, because, like,
adding the two-point conversion to the NFL, that was, like, 30 years ago, right?
Are you talking about the extra point?
Yeah.
The new kick, that's like, I don't know, 20 years maybe, 15. Are you talking about the new extra point?
No, not the new extra point. I'm talking about, I mean, in the mid-90s,
you couldn't go for two?
You were screwed. Yeah, there was no two-point conversion to go for.
I do not remember that.
Maybe it was like 35 years ago. Where are we?
I feel like we keep
adding overtime to college football. That was like the mid-90s.
That was like 97, I think.
I will say, to your point about rule changes, the changing of college overtime is a disaster.
I do not like the changing. And that was also the classic college football of overreacting to
player safety.
Well, the funny thing is we had 7 overtime games before, and we didn't do anything about it, but it's just we had Twitter.
Right.
I don't necessarily know if we've made NFL overtime better. We keep tweaking it, and I'm not sure it's any better.
I just keep going back to where it should just be like college.
I would, or give me 10 minutes of, like,
10 minutes regular ball. Yeah. That's fine.
And I guess that's kind of what it's become in the playoffs.
More or less, I mean, because they know they can draw out the possessions if they...
Each team gets the ball.
Yeah.
Each team's going to get...